Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School, the podcast where you get fresh insight from leaders at top tech companies and startups. Remember, you can learn product management in person at our 15 campuses worldwide or study with us online. Visit productschool.com to learn more about our courses. You can also hang out with the leaders from these podcasts at our hundreds of annual events and catch us at ProductCon, the world's largest PM conference that takes place every year across the United States and in London.
So more about me. I actually have a new title. I lead program management for Microsoft's AI for Good research lab. Our mission is to drive and infuse data and AI across three main pillars: AI for Earth, AI for accessibility, and AI for humanitarian action. In the past 10 years, I've worked on various data products that now run on Azure Data Factory, Bing, and Windows. And I've led teams, led analytics teams across finance, marketing, and now legal. I'm here to share with you top lessons learned and also some building blocks of a data-driven culture. The most important thing that I'd like to start off with is it's often easy to get mired in the details of data. Data can be intimidating, even though it's really job one these days. It's easy to think about implementation details, capital investments in infrastructure, all the time you need to spend on data preparation, that we lose sight of our true North Star, our customers. Very often, big data is not the right answer. It's not the solution. The best data is often small data, those tiny tidbits you gather when you sit down with customers and understand what they're truly looking for and what they need. OXO Good Grips is a great example of a company that did something similar. They sat down with customers and reimagined measuring cups. They invented the top-down measuring system. They thought differently, and they paid attention to design. This is especially important in industries where competition is fierce. You really need to reimagine and do things differently. OXO Good Grips reinvented an entire suite of products, and in doing so, they revolutionized an industry that had been unchanged for decades. They didn't run focus groups to understand what is the right feature for the 18 to 34 demographic. They didn't manage or correlate product sales to font and spacing on their cups like we do in Google Ads and Bing Ads. They ran observation studies. The right approach to data collection and how you go about doing it is very important as well. The law of unintended consequences. There will always be people who try to game the system. And how do we as PMs and data engineers plan for that? The oldest reference to this law is back in British India when the British government wanted to get rid of the venomous cobra population. And how they choose to do this is by offering a reward for every dead cobra. But unfortunately, they failed to account for enterprising snake charmers who chose instead to start rearing cobras for a living because it was easier to raise a cobra and deliver it dead. It was less expensive to do so than actually go and find cobras in the wild. What does this mean for us? There will always be people who try to game the system. It's important to instrument for leading indicators of failure and build in feedback loops that inform us when we have unintended consequences. Always remember the cobra. The placebo effect. There's a lot we can learn from the medical industry where drugs need to perform better than placebos before they're approved for trial. There are documented studies that prove the larger the placebo, the greater the impact on the individual. Yellow is a great color. Yellow placebos perform better than green and red placebos. And what does this mean for us? Invest in a control sample, especially if you have many hippos in your audience, highest paid people whose opinions matter and are hard to overturn. Power BI, Tableau, ClickView, Google Analytics are all very, very popular these days. And as visualization tools become more accessible to the masses, we see a lot of correlations, like the relationship between Nicolas Cage and drowning accidents, the number of pirates in the ocean, and global warming. It's very important to know that correlation doesn't always imply causation. There's a lot of scrutiny in the press recently about gender and racial bias. But bias is prevalent everywhere. How many are left-handed in the audience today? Woohoo! I have terrible, terrible news for you. You are likely to die 9 years younger than all the right-handed people in the audience. Or according to New England Journal of Medicine, one of the most prestigious journals in the medical field in 1991, published this study. It's not available in the archives anymore, but it was cited in the New York Times and the BBC. Those articles are still available. The study failed to account for an increase in the left-handed population, 12% increase in the left-handed population between 1910 and 1950. For years, left-handed people had been trained to become right-handed till we had the world wars and we had a lot of other bigger stuff to be worried about. So what does this mean for us? Unconscious bias is a real thing. There are over 150 types of biases, and the SEEDS model of behavioral research classifies them into five broad categories, like safety bias, experience bias. The only way to be sure that your data is not biased is to review your insights and your model outputs with thorough peer review processes before you publish them. This is true for both insights as well as machine learning models and research studies. That being said, how can we put some building blocks in place that can prevent these unintended consequences or biases from catching us off guard? Step one is a diverse team. It's easy to think of diversity in terms of gender diversity. There's a lot of scrutiny, once again, in the press about that. But diversity is about more than age or gender. It's about diversity of skills and education. Within our AI for Good lab, we go well beyond, we hire for education beyond traditional computer science and information systems. Water resources, transportation, genomics, all these fields employ a scientific approach to data gathering, a scientific approach to hypothesis testing, which we can learn from. Having a balanced team strengthens your peer review processes and catches bias before it gets dangerous. There's also diversity of skills within the data profession. If you're a PM looking to build your data skills, you may be further along than you think. There are four categories of data people. There are the data PMs, there are data scientists, data analysts, and data engineers. Each sub-profession brings its own unique mix of skills, tools, and technologies. PMs add structure, data scientists bring a scientific approach and a process, data engineers bring rigor that help big data systems run at scale, and then you have the analysts, which focus on quick twitch data solutions, code that make the data engineers cringe. And if you're an organization or if you're a team leader looking to build a data-driven culture, find the mix that's right for you. As PMs, our North Star is our customers. We often lead with customer empathy, or we should really. It's helpful to understand customers along three main dimensions. Customer empathy is one of the classes I teach at Product School. It's very important to think about a product not in terms of its features and implementation details, but really what it does for the customer. I often use coffee as an example. Coffee needs to taste good from a product standpoint, but what it really does for me is that it gives me a reason to connect with my friend. It gives me a reason, it gives me a reason to spend time on my patio at the end of a long day. It's a great pick-me-up. It makes me feel good. Here's a slightly more noble example. A partner of ours in the humanitarian action space, Team Rubicon, their primary goal is to connect volunteers with those in disaster areas. But they go one step further. They also care about their volunteers who are veterans. They want to instill in them a new sense of purpose and an opportunity to connect with other veterans who are recovering from PTSD. Customers are more than those who receive your products. Your employees are your customers. Your partners are your customers, too. And there's also a difference in circumstance. A brain tumor is a very different circumstance than a sinus infection. If I have a sinus infection, my requirements on provider quality are much lower. A nurse practitioner will do just fine. Mayo Clinic revolutionized urgent care in Minnesota a few years ago, and companies like Immediate Clinic followed suit. They're based on the premise that the cost of provider quality could be manipulated to meet customer circumstances for urgent care in a different way than hospitals do so today. They identified 6 parameters and decided what was right. Where could they cut costs? Where could they keep levels of quality stable over time while meeting the most urgent customer need to reduce wait time and to speed up appointment time? Once you have your customer needs, which become your North Star, the guiding light, it's important to translate that into a learning plan. And when we think about unintended consequences and biases, it's important to think of FATE principles: fairness, accountability, transparency, and ethics. Is your data being captured in a way that is respectful of your customer's privacy needs? Are your insights likely to be misinterpreted in a way that could harm one of your customer groups? Are your business rules documented fairly, clearly, so there is no room for confusion? Having a learning plan also helps get buy-in early in your analytics lifecycle, so you are less influenced by the biases introduced by the very same hippos that govern results. A second important takeaway in building a learning plan is to get really specific with your KPIs. Those of you who are familiar with statistics know continuous data is king. It is better, you have more flexibility with continuous data than with discrete data sets. So what does this mean? Sales effectiveness can be measured. An effective salesperson is someone who's knowledgeable, someone who's friendly, and someone who's responsive. Understand your key attributes in terms of specific measurable KPIs, knowledge measured on training tests, your customer satisfaction measured on partner satisfaction surveys, and then understand if what you believe maps to a metric, what is the result and what is the frequency of measurement. And remember the cobra, always plan to mitigate unintended consequences. In our previous example of a salesperson, the number one worry that most organizational leaders have is when we train people, we worry they leave. So in order to mitigate for response, we could track yet another metric, which is employee attrition, and correlate that with training and partner satisfaction. I mentioned earlier that small data can be the solution. This is especially true in the case of tail and sparse use cases. If you have a newer product with very limited data and instrumentation, qual and quant are your best friends. Now we get to the fun stuff, or less fun stuff, depending on your interests. Data literacy. The step one of data literacy is really getting to a single source of truth and a data dictionary. What is the salesperson working on? Who are the employees associated with the salesperson? What is the training score associated? Make sure your links are present across your data sets. Make sure the rules are documented. The purpose of the data dictionary is always to ensure that you work yourself out of a job and you're not in the role of maintaining that data dictionary year in and year out. The steps of data processing are fairly automated now in several cloud services. There are several services out there in AWS, Google Cloud, in Azure for data processing, ingestion. We have Azure ML, we have AML. We have several services on Azure. But data visualization, data quality and analysis continues to be more an art than science. So if you are investing in building a data-driven culture, the number one investment would be in data visualization tools. And if you're a PM looking to build data skills, graphical analysis is not as hard as it looks. There are basically four types of visuals, and a quick tip is you'll mostly need comparison and composition. The most popular tool we often use in data analysis is, of course, the Pareto chart. If you're a parent and you're worried about being late, you just need to optimize for traffic and childcare. As any parent can attest, they're hardly ever late due to oversleeping because we're up at the crack of dawn because we have little people jumping all over us. Hypothesis testing. Now we get to the more fun stuff. Ruben is going to spend a lot more time on this, so I'll leave you with a few quick takeaways. Hypothesis tests help you prove out causation. No matter how beautiful your charts and your graphical tools are, correlation is not causation. Hypothesis tests help you quantify the effect. What is the size of the difference between your placebo and your treatment? And what is the significance, which is what is the likelihood that you'll be wrong if you accept a difference? The biggest difference between data-driven and non-data-driven cultures is probably the life cycle of a belief. In a data-driven culture, a belief is thoroughly tested, first with offline experiments. These can be surveys, panel studies, and then a rigorous scientific approach to online experimentation before SHIP. But the reality is we often lead with limited resources. We cannot always be scientific in our approach. Scientific approach means we test one change per experiment. But if we're being design focused in our experimentation, we often might need to couple multiple changes into one experiment. Do what's right for you based on the significance of the changes and the power of the beliefs behind them. If you want to isolate one change to one specific effect, you might need a more scientific than a design-focused approach. For those that are new to hypothesis testing, here's a quick cheat sheet. I mentioned earlier about continuous and discrete data. Water temperature is a great example. Water temperature can be described as temperature in degrees Celsius or Fahrenheit, or it can be described as discrete data sets, hot or cold. When you're working with continuous or normal data, you have greater flexibility in the number of hypothesis tests you can run. And there's also a famous product called Microsoft Excel that has an extension that you can use to test continuous normal data. It's not to say that you can never work with discrete data. There's a whole slew of tests available to deal with discrete data. You'll just need to spend more time gathering more data points to have reasonable hypotheses. So you have data, you have great data, you're armed with insights, and you're ready to convince your GMs and your directors. Where do you go from there? The most important thing is establishing a sense of urgency, according to the Cotter model. And Forbes also has a very interesting data point. 85% of data-driven insights end in failure. They're always received with optimism. So what does that mean for us as PMs when we have compelling insights and we really want to translate them into product outcomes? That's where the power of a great story comes in. In the summer of 1963, 250,000 people gathered together to hear Dr. King speak. And there were no invitations, there was no web marketing, there was no paid media associated with the event. And yet, there were 250,000 people who found the right place and the right time for the event. We have about 1,000 people here. Dr. King didn't have the best insights or the best ideas. He didn't have unique insight into racism and suffering that was different from insights other people had at his time. He wasn't the best orator of his time either, but he had a gift. he had a way of communicating what he believed in a way that forged strong allies with people who believed or people who realized that they believed the same outcomes. He didn't communicate his plan for change. He communicated his vision and the power of his beliefs. So I encourage all of you, there are leaders, our hippos, and then there are those who lead. Be one who leads. Be one who makes data work, make data work for you, and inspire and spur others into action. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.